This is a new voice for a new Scotland.
Okay, good evening. Welcome to the most recent version of Building the Scottish State. I'm here with Chris McCusker, and we will be watching an interview that I had earlier today with Ian Blackford, which was quite interesting. And then after that, Chris and I will be having a live discussion for the remainder of the hour. So while we were not able to get questions for discussion during the interview with Ian this morning, you will be able to submit questions to the Twitter address below or the phone number so that you can get in some questions for us about the Ian interview or other things that pertain to independence. So without further ado, let's get rolling on the interview. It lasts about 25 minutes, and then after it's finished, Chris and I will be back to speak about it in more detail. Okay? Good evening, everybody. This is a pre-recorded interview with Ian Blackford. And so I will, first of all, Ian, thank you for being with us. And great. I first wanted to just get the lowdown on what's going on at Westminster. How is it functioning to the degree it is functioning?
Well, we don't believe that Westminster does work for Scotland, do we? And I think really the last few months have demonstrated that it's been an absolute shambles. Westminster has to come into the 21st century, and the fact that we can vote electronically in the Scottish Parliament. But the shortcomings of Westminster have been absolutely exposed with the absolute shambles of failing to observe social distancing and the queues for voting coming right through Westminster Hall out into the Green. The Parliament that's not fit for purpose, that really demonstrated it, led by Jacob Rees-Mogg, of course, the member for the 18th century, as he's often called. You know, like, it is a shambles because we had to show leadership. We had to show that we recognised the scale of the health emergency. And we ought to have been doing what we were asking everybody else to do, where they could do, and that was work from home. And so we've arrived at a situation which is less than perfect, where we've got a number of members that are down in Parliament, because if we want to speak and debate, we have to be there. We can ask questions, we can participate in statements, we can now vote, but only with a proxy. So it really isn't great, and it just shows that democracy Westminster style is somewhat creaking, to say the least.
And what have you voted on? I remember seeing the queue lining up outside of Westminster to vote on whether or not to extend the electronic voting. But what have you voted on since then, if anything?
Well, that's really been the key thing. And that's obviously why a number of us were down there that week, because we needed to put as much of the virtual parliament back into place. And that's what we were doing. But these Tories seem to think that it's better to have people in Westminster than it is people participating from the safety of their own home. And it really is ridiculous, because when you talk about the Parliament chamber, you're limited to having an absolute maximum of 50 members in. So it's not great, and it does just demonstrate how Westminster's out of touch. But Mark, I mean, I know there's been a debate about what we should be doing, whether we should be there or not, but I would just say to people that we do have to hold this government to account. And there's a real job, a real challenge that we have through this, because of course it's not just a health emergency, it's an economic emergency. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the deficiencies in the furlough scheme, the deficiencies in the self-employed, the lack of a guaranteed basic income, the fact that so many people are falling through the net, we have got a responsibility to shine the light onto that stuff. And also, I think, to demonstrate that because of the powers of the Scottish Parliament, think what the COVID crisis has shown, just as Brexit did, which doesn't give us the powers that we need in order to protect the interests of the Scottish people. So we need to be there to make these points. And you've seen, whether it's been the First Minister, the Finance Minister or myself, we're pushing for more powers so we can make sure that we can kickstart the economy as we come out of this, that we can make that evolution towards a greener Scotland, a fairer Scotland. So there's a job to do. And until we're independent, unless the party takes a different view, then we need to make sure that we're represented at Westminster.
Regarding Brexit, at the end of the month, just in a few days, that normally the UK government should have asked for an extension by the end of the month. And assuming they don't, that pretty much guarantees a hard Brexit. Is that your understanding? And is it possible to make any provision with Europe to perhaps remain in the single market or customs union? Or is that a possible scenario?
Well, of course it is, because staying in the single market, the customs union, is the least worst option. Yeah. And that's what we should be pushing for. Look, at the end of the day, you're right, there is that kind of cliff edge of the end of June, but the ultimate cliff edge is the one at the end of December, because that's when transition ends. And in a sense, what the UK government are doing, they're playing a game of roulette. They actually do seem to believe that they can get a deal. But the point is that there's no evidence that backs up that assertion. Mm-hmm. And a failure to get a deal would mean that there'd be an enormous risk to the Scottish economy. And that's why it's sensible, why we're leading the charge, that there has to be an extension to the Brexit process. If you just take one example, let's think of the shellfish fishermen that through the COVID crisis have had the closure of their markets in Europe. They've just had a taste of what could happen if we don't get a deal with Europe as we head through the rest of 2020. So the stakes are high. And at a time where we've had the COVID crisis, it's giving us the biggest recession that we have had in living memory, with a threat, I have to say, of a depression on top. The fact that the UK government is prepared to threaten the livelihood of our citizens, because that's what they're doing, by not effecting a decent trade deal, is the height of irresponsibility. So we've got a job to do to make sure that we highlight all of that. But, of course, we need to continue to make the point that if we want to save Scotland from this shambles, then we need to make sure that we have that independence referendum, that we have the exit route out of the UK to a position of safety, and that's an independent Scotland being in the European Union.
Okay. Well, I wanted to actually propose a scenario that could function. As we know, we have the Plan A with under a Section 30 order, but that I don't think that has any evidence that it will be granted by Johnson or anybody else for the time being. Then there's the Plan B, supposedly, of next year's Holyrood election, where if they would get enough, that would be a mandate for independence. But I've sent you the digitalcovenant.scot site that we've did for having a blockchain online petition. And this is actually the fruit of the 500-mile march that took place a couple of years ago, where my colleague Nicholas engaged himself to deliver a blockchain capability. And this is actually what we've done in this digital covenant. And what I'm suggesting is that maybe a possible scenario, I mean, this is up and running, we're getting signatures, and if the Scottish government was able to commit that once we reached a certain threshold of signatures, that would signify the end of the union. And I think that this approach would have certain advantages. First of all, it would allow Nicola Sturgeon to keep the promise that she would hopefully have some type of plebiscite in 2020. It can be done, it's already going. And if we got full input from the Scottish government, saying that they would respect that if it reached a certain number of signatures, that would allow, again, Nicola Sturgeon to keep the promise to have something in 2020. It could be done before Brexit, in the coming months, if we can get, say, 3 million signatures. It would be much less expensive than the traditional referendum, because in 2014, it cost over 15 million. And the price of the cryptocurrency for this, which is largely self-financing, is about 500,000, and it's already in place. So I wanted to suggest that to you. And do you think that could be a way that we could achieve independence with, based on things that have already been committed to, and in this blockchain petition, which is irrefutable, very rigorously conducted, in that we assure all we have a check of identity, we make sure that they have the proper credentials. Do you think that's something that could be done?
Well, look, I mean, I would always encourage people to think creatively about opportunities that can be grasped. But let me say this to you, Mark. We're obviously at the moment living through the scale of the COVID crisis. And obviously we said that first and foremost, we've got a responsibility to try and protect the health of the population. Secondly, of course, we're going to make sure that we can recover economically from this crisis. Mm-hmm. And for my friends and colleagues in government in Edinburgh, that has been the immediate priority. But I put that in the context of the immediate priority. I think it's obvious that everything that we've seen for us emphasises the need for Scotland to have the powers of an independent country. And I can say to you that work is continuing to shape those arguments. So, for example, the Social Justice Commission is meeting and doing good work. you know, what I would say to people is that if you think of everything that's happened over the course of the last few years, the electoral cycle that we've had, having had the Westminster election last year, a tremendous expression of a view from the people of Scotland in that election that they have the right to determine their own future. Mm-hmm. And I guess what all of us want to do in the broader movement is to make sure that that can happen. And when you have all this talk about Plan A, Plan B and all the rest of it, I'd simply say to people that Plan A has been working insofar as what we've seen is an increase in support for independence and indeed a support increase in support for the SNP, because whilst the Yes movement has breadth and depth, it's still the SNP from an electoral position that has to be the one that has to be in the vanguard of making sure that we can deliver this with that support across the whole movement. And I'd simply say to people that if you look at what's happened, and everyone that's kind of been looking at different scenarios, even to the extent of saying dissolve the union and all the rest of it, what we've got to keep in mind in all of this is that we need to win the hearts and minds of as many people as possible. We need to create this consensus that the natural position, the default position for the vast majority of people in Scotland, that they want our country to be independent. Now, if we're honest with ourselves, it's only over the course of the last few months that we've gone into a situation in the polls that there's a consistent majority for independence. We've got to make sure that we continue to listen to people, that we continue to debate with people, and we build that consensus, that we build from that majority that we've already got. Because I would simply say to all of those that question Plan A, you get to the point that the dam will burst, quite simply because Boris Johnson or anybody else can't stand in the way of that popular expression of opinion from the people of Scotland. That's democracy. Now, the reason that I believe that is because if you think of all the alternatives, and I can see your Catalonian flag in the background, but I'm sad to say that everything that the Catalonians have gone through that hasn't taken them any closer to independence. And if I say one thing to you, Mark, and that is that when we left the European Union on a formal basis at the end of January, we had an engagement with just about every EU member state. And the goodwill which is shown towards us is quite phenomenal. Mm-hmm. That people recognise the position that we're in. They're almost willing us to succeed, if I can put it that way. But what I say to people is that as we go on this journey, and we will win, we will have that referendum, we will win that referendum, that we need to have the international recognition, which is essential in us delivering success. And that's why what's often referred to as the gold standard is the right way to do this. But, you know, what I find interesting is that there are lots of people that have come to us over the course of the last few years, weren't on side with us before. And people, quite frankly, are not impressed when they see a UK government stand in the way of democracy. We've got to continue to win the hearts and the minds. We've got to build that big tent that we've got. We've got to build support for independence. None of us are closed off to other ways of doing things, but I'd simply say to people that Plan A is the best route. Now, okay, we want this to happen as quickly as possible. And of course, we're looking forward to the elections to the Scottish Parliament next year. Let's make sure that there's a tsunami, for the SNP. And nobody, Johnson or anybody else, can stand in the way of Scotland having a democratic right to choose its own future. But I appeal to people right through the movement, and I understand the frustrations, I really do, but I appeal to people to stay with us. This has been a long, long journey. You could argue about where the starting point was. Is it the Scottish Home Rule Association in 1882? Is it the formation of the SNP and all the rest of it? I mean, I've been part of this movement since the 1970s. My grandfather was an early member of the SNP. This has been a long journey. The end is in sight. But the one thing that we must have unity, because our opponents will pick us apart if we don't focus on that delivery. And I have to say respectfully to everybody, please support the plan that the First Minister, that the government has. I firmly believe it will deliver for us.
But how do we get around if they don't grant a Section 30 order? What I'm suggesting with this is that it's a verifiable way of measuring support, through a petition, a verified blockchain petition that is in effect right now. And what I'm suggesting is that if the Scottish government were willing to say, if we get a certain number of signatures, then we will verified measurable support for independence. And, it's perfectly democratic. There's nothing illegal about it.
I'm not putting people off coming forward with initiatives and ideas, and that should be encouraged. All I'm saying to you based on what I said about the EU member states doing things through the constitutional route is by far the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say to you, there comes a point that Boris Johnson or anybody else can't continue to say no. But the obligation we've got collectively is to build that confidence in Scotland being an independent country, build that support. This will become unstoppable. I do urge everyone to give us the time to show that we can deliver on that plan A, that the demand for a Section 30 order will become unstoppable. We will win.
What are the possibilities of getting, for example, universal basic income? I know that Sturgeon has provided ideas for that, but ultimately does it not depend on the UK government, who is unlikely to grant the authority to do that? Or how do you see getting over these powers that is absolutely vital?
Mark, absolutely. It's a fundamental question. And I can tell you that the Social Justice Commission are working on this. They're looking at this as we speak. Of course, there are the pilots that the Scottish Government is putting in place. But you're absolutely right. For us, I mean, we have a burning desire to create that fairer society, to create opportunities for people, to make sure that the safety net works in the way it should. That's very different from the UK government, even to the extent we talk about social security, they talk about welfare, mm-hmm. and that says it all about the differences. And you're right, there is not support for universal basic income from the Conservatives. We'll continue to work on it. We'll work on a cross-party basis. I've asked for a meeting with the Chancellor to discuss this. But if we are to deliver that society which is rooted in fairness, it's rooted in the principle that society is only as strong as its weakest link.
Mm-hmm.
We can't deliver that in the UK. The mm-hmm. only way we're going to deliver that is through Scotland becoming an independent country. And this comes to the heart of the argument in many ways, and it's the appeal that we need to have to people that haven't been with us in the past. And we're asking them the question, what kind of country do you want to live in? We don't want independence for the sake of it. We want independence because we want to change Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
We want a fairer country. We want one which is based on delivery of sustainable economic growth. It has to be based on a green future where we accept our climate responsibilities.
It's really just a question of how we get it. And I know that there's a lot of people who are really nervous, you know, I mean, and genuinely worried about, you know, a no deal Brexit in December, and then maybe and then being ripped out of Europe completely, only to, you know, maybe there will be a tsunami of support in the next Holy Word elections. But again, people, I think there's a lot of concern about people that what if it doesn't work? I mean, are we stuck in a post-Brexit UK forever? Or is
if you look over the course of the last few months and just look at the commentary that we've seen on the reflections on the leadership that our First Minister has given over this crisis, and contrast that with the Prime Minister in the UK, and I mean, obviously, I'm talking to a lot of constituents,
sure.
And I'm amazed at the number of people that have made that reflection, that we've had true leadership from our First Minister.
Mm-hmm. She's got like 80% approval rating, something like, even among Conservatives, she gets
So we have to have that conversation with folk that perhaps have been reticent about supporting us in the past. Trust us. Mm-hmm. Let's put this in the context that the Scottish Parliament's been with us for just over 20 years. It's a short period of our nation's history, but my goodness, Scotland has changed for the better.
Mm-hmm.
It's about people having the confidence to come with us, Mark.
Yeah.
And I would just say to people, please stick with us. Please give us that time. We will win this.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely convinced we will win this. We must hang together. And it has to be, and I've got to say to people, because I know there's the issue about what happens with the second vote, but I'd say to everyone that the potential success that we have now was based on the SNP going into government in 2007. The reason that we went into government in 2007 is because we won a sufficient number of list seats, and that last seat that tipped us over the edge was Dave Thompson winning the seat in the Highlands and Islands. We need people in this election, the one that's coming up, to give their support for the SNP is the key that will unlock the door that will deliver that independence for us.
Mm-hmm. What do you see as the powers that the Scottish government really needs in order to to navigate this crisis and get, there's again more fiscal powers, you know, the ability to create a universal basic income. Well, what other powers do you see as necessary for?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't mean this in a flippant way, but I mean, I can't help and hear you put the question, thinking of the statement from Bill Clinton many years ago: "It's the economy, stupid." Mm-hmm. And it really is the powers to make a difference for people. So, I mean, we've had this week Benny Higgins' report. And there's a lot of good stuff which is in that about the need, the necessity of the government to be able to take stakes in companies, because we need to have an investment-led recovery. Mm-hmm. It has to be about that transition that I was talking about to a greener economy. So we need the powers to borrow, but we need the powers to invest, because, I mean, if you look in the rearview mirror, we've been constrained by the fact that we haven't had sufficient economic growth in Scotland, because, quite frankly, if you look at what's happened across the UK, right across the Western world, there's been a shift towards an increase in dividends, an increase in share buybacks. We haven't seen the investment which is necessary to drive the growth and productivity, to drive higher living standards. The government's going to have to take its responsibilities of laying the architecture to allow that to happen. But we can only do that. We can only help shape and create these opportunities for people if we've got the powers to do so.
Mm-hmm. Do you see getting these powers under while still in the UK? I mean, is it just completely futile to, I mean, you know, to try to get the powers just because they're just not going to give them?
Well, in many respects, when the UK faces some of the same challenges that we do, and they're going to have to support business out of this crisis, support business in order that we can support people. And I think in the end, they're going to have to engage in spending. So whether it comes from Barnett consequentials or whether it comes through other powers, we need to make sure that we are lobbying day in, day out, that we're standing up, we're speaking for the people of Scotland, and we're getting these powers. I'm not taking no for an answer on this one. Mm-hmm.
The payments to support the wages that have been going on, they're to end in October. Is that correct? And is it that the government is paying employers to keep people on the payroll? Is that basically it?
Yeah, and actually it's something we were calling for right at the start of this crisis, because if that hadn't happened, then we would have been looking at, I mean, it's bad enough at the moment seeing the increase in unemployment, but it would have been an awful lot worse. But here's the issue, Mark, because they are ending that program, in our opinion, far too early. Our tourist economy is going to have a very short season, if one much at all. So in effect, it means that the tourist economy is since having close to three winters. The winter just passed, this is another winter, and the winter to come. So that industry needs supported, and the workers need supported right through the crisis.
Yeah.
And that's what Westminster is failing to do. Mm-hmm. So the price that we will pay, and the cut-off period, or the cut-off period for being on the system and having been listed with HMRC, was too early. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that had job offers, a lot of people that actually started work, were not included in the system, and that was a disgrace, and the Chancellor refused to accept responsibility to make sure that nobody was left behind. And that comes back to the point about basic income. For us, everybody had to be looked after, and the Chancellor took the view that if people weren't getting the financial support, then, well, they could look at universal credit. What a disgrace. What a way to look at this. We are responsible for shutting down the economy. We need to make sure that people were supported. Too many have been left behind as a consequence of the Chancellor not accepting his full responsibility.
I apologize for the noise, but we have one final question. What does Ian think of the Martin J. Keating's court case about the right for the Scottish Parliament to set the Scottish referendum?
Well, you know, ultimately, the powers that we are asking Westminster to deliver is that it's right that the Scottish Parliament should choose the timing of any independence referendum. But that should be a power that sits with the Scottish Parliament. We're seeking to have that power transferred. So, I mean, I respect the right of anyone to back up the arguments that we're putting by looking at legal routes. But what we're concentrating on is the political argument.
Given the noise, I'll leave it there. But thank you so much, Mr. Blackford, for being with us this morning. And I hope we can talk again soon.
Yeah, thank you. My pleasure to be with you. Thanks very much.
Okay, so thanks for watching the interview there with Ian Blackford. So what did you think of what he said? Were you in agreement with most of it? Personally, I was a little bit put off by or a little disappointed that there wasn't more of an engagement of what they're actually going to do. And I know there's a lot of people who are frustrated, tired, and want to know what's going to happen. and are concerned about a no-deal Brexit, and as I pointed out in the interview, what happens if there's no Section 30 and we're dragged out of Europe and we're stuck in post-Brexit UK hellscape? How do you see it?
First of all, thanks very much for inviting me on, Mark. I really appreciate it. My analysis of Ian's interview, and I have a lot of respect for Ian, he gave stock answers to some very stock questions. I know it's frustrating for an awful lot of indie activists not to hear somebody go off-piste, shall we say, from what the First Minister is advising. There's a lot of socialist values within what Ian is saying. However, I'm struggling to see how those socialist values could be put into practice.
Well, certainly while still in the UK, I think that a lot of people are feeling like the UK is not going to give a Section 30 order. They're not going to give any additional powers. And I hope that what Ian says is correct, and that there is a surge in support. I know that there is a majority in favor of independence, but what's to stop the UK from blocking it for the indefinite future if we don't take a different path?
Off camera, I was privately chatting with your good self. My son has finished his BA in political science, and I was chatting to him about the fact that there is possibly, I don't know the timescale, but there is possibly an appeal that Scotland could make under the Human Rights Convention. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we are being obviously denied our democratic right to be independent. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be more reinforced if we have a further majority. I mean, how many mandates does one country need? My question, what does it for me, is that if we have a tsunami of SNP MSPs in 2021, and say, for argument's sake, we are wedded to Westminster for another 5 years, and God forbid we have to go through another general election, and let's just say that we have 59 out of 59 down there, it is not Boris Johnson that we are fighting, it is the British establishment. And if you look back at the partition in India and you see how hard that was and how grudgingly it was given to them.
And Ireland, of course, as well.
And Ireland as well, of course, yes. The other thing that indie activists have to recognise, and what, again, I agree with Ian, is that we have to work as hard as we can to draw a consensus. And I believe that it has to be at least in the high 60s and early 70s in sort of like percentage rates to the fact that A, it's an unequal union, B, we're being denied our democracy, and C, more importantly, is the fact that we are being denied our right to self-determination.
Well, I know, and the thing is, I think you have a point, but the thing is, to what court, to what is our, what would our standing be? And the UK wants to withdraw from the European Convention of Human Rights. It's just really depressing to look forward and see that the degree to which the UK is pulling out of all of these conventions, and including the EU, you know, what recourse would Scotland have if after Brexit and after even with the success in Holyrood election, Scotland's just stuck? That's my central argument for when I was talking about the digital covenant, because that would be a way that we can, if we could convince the Scottish government that if we get a certain number of signatures that we should be able to have independence, I honestly see that as the simplest solution that has already begun. But in order to get those 3 million signatures or so on digitalcovenant.scot, we need the Scottish government to say that they would abide by the instructions given by that covenant. And I guess I was proposing that to Ian without having explained the digital covenant. I want to continue to advocate for that. I think it's very important to make our intentions known before the end of the year. And this is a way to do it. Whereas their plan A or plan B, none of offers a way out before Brexit.
And with greatest respect, I've known you for a number of years, and your work that you do, I think, is absolutely outstanding. Even going back to what we were trying to do with the Glasgow City Council and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What I personally think that we do not need an A, B and C plan. I think we need an A through to Z plan. Mm-hmm. We have to have a comprehensive plan that the Scottish Government, or should I say that the SNP, taking in fact the fact that, you know, I don't envisage that there will be ever a unionist party in charge of Scotland ever again. Mm-hmm. But I'll probably take that to my grave, right enough. And everybody should at least take solace in the fact that we will always have a left-thinking SNP party. And I see my job as being the vice convener of the socialist group is to try and keep the party on the left side of politics. Mm-hmm. And not veer off or capitulate to the centre-left, a scenario that I don't see happening, but it is a possibility. What needs to happen is the fact, and Ian made this point, is the fact that everybody has to come out with innovative new ideas to invigorate the indie activists. Now, that, and I say this as a bit of a caveat, that must include people's own individual interaction on the doorstep. I'm not a great fan of, you've got a stock set of questions and you must ask them on the doorstep. And, it runs through A, B, C, D. What if this? What if that? What if the next thing? Actually take your time on the doorstep and engage with people and ask them what they personally think. Not what the SNP party think, but what they personally think and what is their vision for an independent Scotland. I'm a great believer in what Peter Bell said, my good friend Peter Bell, the blogger, is that for too long Scotland has always tried to justify an independent Scotland and what an independent Scotland would look like. We now know what a despotic UK government looks like.
Absolutely. It wasn't apparent enough in the age of Thatcher.
Well, exactly, yes. But what we now have to do is we now have to ask people on the doorstep, is you qualify your belief in the union. You tell me why it is so benevolent to Scotland.
Yeah. Well, the difficulty is we're in the middle of a pandemic and we can't, even if there were to be a referendum in the traditional sense, there can't be the campaign. And that's why I'm going back to this idea of the digital covenant where people can sign online. The Scottish government wouldn't have to do anything other than engage to respect the orders given by the covenant. And it's up and running. If we got serious buy-in from the Scottish government, again, just saying we'll respect the outcome once a certain threshold of signatures is met, then we can take care of it. The Scottish government can get on with the coronavirus crisis. They don't have to be as distracted by it. But I mean, I think this is just an absolutely ideal situation or a framework for.
I'm not shutting your blockchain down. I think it's a great idea.
I'm just trying to get in the plugins right now. So
explain
to people what we're doing. And
what you have on your side, Mark, is time. Unfortunately, we do have to wait for 2021. We do have to wait for that election. And we do have to see what the Scottish Parliament is going to consist of. Whether it's going to consist of a majority of SNP MSPs, which I think will probably happen. I would like to see more green MSPs. And I would also like to see an independent Scottish party as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for three things here. It's within a healthy democracy. Because if you look at it, and I urge people to just think about this for a second, that at this moment in time, we only have the SNP and the Greens. Mm-hmm. And in Holyrood, we have the Tories, overtly unionist. We have the weather vane of the Scottish Labour, who I would say slightly unionist, but there's a couple of swithers there. And then we have the Scottish Lib Dems, who doesn't know if it's New York or New Year. Mm-hmm. Because we've been having warm words from Willie Rennie that he is. I was shock horror to find out that he was in favour of UBI.
Willie Rennie?
Yeah.
When it, okay,
all right. Willie Rennie is 100%, you know, with UBI. You know, that then leads to a whole load of questions as to Willie Rennie needs to answer. As the fact that if he supports UBI, he has to support the mechanisms in order to get it.
Absolutely.
The only mechanisms in order to get UBI is to have the fiscal powers devolved from Westminster to Scotland in order for us to start a UBI.
I just don't see that happening. That's the conundrum. One of the comments, Robert Knight on Facebook, no matter how excellent our arguments are, the Tories will just sit there resolute and ask, what are you going to do about it? Then what? That's my real concern that caused somewhat of an angst when I spoke to Ian earlier, because it's almost like you have this, it's almost like a prophecy. You know, it's prophetic based, you know, independence rather than, what are we going to do about it if they say no? And of course, I know it's in the context of the coronavirus, absolutely. But that I think that that's a great source of concern for so many people, and especially after Brexit, when any constraints that the UK may have had before within the EU was completely gone. And we'll be getting chlorinated chicken and the whiskey brand will be sold off to the Peruvians or something like that. And it's just deeply, deeply worrying. I don't know, maybe, you know, at a certain point, the EU will step in and say, look, if you want to, you know, have a referendum, we'll respect it. That may be in the cards. And because as Ian was saying, there has been a lot of communication between the Scots and the other EU nations. There's a lot of goodwill. They just want to see how Scotland can get out. But I think people would be very much relieved to have some clarity on that, if there is it. And that and may come in the coming months. I don't know. I would have expected it to come like really within a couple of days, because it normally at the end of June, there was supposed to have been a decision about whether or not to prolong the extension period. But apparently that's been pushed to October. So now yeah. Barney so- said that it's in October that is the moment of truth, rather than just within a week. So maybe that stretches it out a bit, but I just don't trust the UK government at all.
I personally don't trust them. Seeing as how you were doing a shameless plug for your blockchain, I'll do a shameless plug for my Twitter feed, which is sure. Nicholas number one comrade. And I shared an article from, I think it was The Guardian, and it highlights the fact that three of the devolved nations, a majority, I might add, of the three devolved nations asked the UK government for an extension to Brexit.
Yeah.
And that one UK government knocked it down. And I know it was a long time that I went to school, but three to the power of one does not work.
You're assuming you're in a family of equal nations, which obviously...
Well, of course, yes, aye. But three over one is a majority, which has been clearly denied by the UK government. And bearing in mind the fact that one of those majorities actually agreed with the government in the first instance.
Right.
And now they're reflecting the fact that due to the coronavirus pandemic, leaving the EU would be fiscally damaging to their own economy. Mm-hmm. So, again, we have an issue which the Northern Ireland Assembly and the Welsh Assembly could possibly draw on the conclusion that this is a denial of the human rights.
Yeah.
I can't get away with that. Maybe it's because, you know, I've got experience in humanitarian issues, but we are being denied our democratic human rights to exercise our voice in a democracy.
I absolutely agree that the problem is that how is it justiciable? Where do we go beyond, you know, pleading with the UK to get this resolved?
Which is why I think that your work on the blockchain should continue.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And you should garner support from the indie activists and non-indie activists as well, people who actually can see that there is a deficit in democracy within Scotland at this moment in time, should be signing up to this as well. And then I'll add in that caveat that you have time on your side before, what is it, March or May next year that the Holyrood elections are?
Is it April, I think? April.
Because of lockdown, my months are absolutely all over the place. Thank God I don't have a wife to remember her birthday. You know, my point is the fact that, you know, ideas such as the one that you've got running shouldn't run out of steam. And, you know, dare I use that wonderful Labour word, you know, it should garner momentum. And then when we have a pro-indie majority within Holyrood, which I fully expect that we will have in 2021, then by all means make your representations individually. That is what lobbying is all about.
Yeah.
And it is basically prostituting yourself from one MSP to another in order to say, look, I've got XYZ here. Let's have a discussion about it and let's see where it can take us.
Just to say to our viewers, it's digitalcovenant.scot that is the site to sign the petition for independence. All of the signatures will be registered on the blockchain, and what we were hoping to get 3 million signatures. We have the technical capability to do so, but we just need people to sign. We need you to tell your friends and to help people. It's very easy. You simply need to download proof of address and a photo ID, and so that we can verify who you are. It's very, very important because we want 100% integrity with this. And so, it's very methodical. Many of the submissions have been rejected because they didn't have the right information. So again, so please sign, please get other people to sign, and let's get, you know, 3 million votes, whatever any politician says. We're living in a very bizarre moment in history. I don't think the independence movement has been diminished any, but the ability, the forte of the independence movement has been the one-on-one discussion with people and convincing them on the doorstep and meetings and stuff like that. But that's gone now for the time being with coronavirus. What do you think we can do in this situation to get more support? I think a lot of it is coming naturally by the just blithering incompetence of the UK government and the very strong performance of Nicola Sturgeon and the Scottish government. But what else do you think we can do to boost support?
Well, in the absence of the SNP having a good PR department, I have been a great advocate for yourselves, Independence Live. I've been a great advocate for Broadcast Scotland.
Yep.
And indie activists must support our own media. And I'm talking about Independence Live and Broadcast in Scotland. I'm not saying boycott the BBC. Be mindful of what the BBC are putting out. Knowledge is power. Having that knowledge, knowing what the BBC are putting out, they are overtly a tool of the establishment. As activists, we have to know what the establishment are saying. But what activists need to do is they need to source their own rebuttal. And in the absence, as I say, and this is a direct criticism of the SNP, is the fact that their PR department is absolutely woeful. If we had, just say for argument's sake, a Saatchi and Saatchi, then I think that, you know, it would make our life a lot easier. So what Independence Live and Broadcast in Scotland, Peter Bell, Wee Ginger Doug, Barhead Boy, they all have to become our own media. And indie activists have to engage, not necessarily agree with every word. I have had countless fallouts with Peter Bell, usually after 5 pints of beer, right enough, you know, yeah, what I mean?
That's often the case. But
I have never fallen out with Wee Ginger Doug, but I don't get obnoxious when I'm having a gin and tonic. But, you know, people have the right to debate and disagree And that should not be denied in any fair democracy. And if the SNP are promoting a fair democracy, they should be opening, they should be welcoming, and they should be accommodating towards these mediums that we have.
I think they should embrace us much more than they do. And I'm very happy that that Ian came on. That's wonderful that he made time for us. And I don't know whether he's done that with other...
He has been on Broadcast in Scotland before, but they need to engage more with the grassroots and not lecture the grassroots on bide your time routine and all the rest of it. The grassroots has been champing at the bit since 2012. And again, I would say gently to Ian, I am assured that he knows that he has my utmost confidence, my utmost solidarity, and my utmost support, is the fact that don't underestimate the activists. We have got the staying power in order to progress the independence question. However, we should be open to other avenues in order to do that, such as the blockchain, such as having our own independent media and promoting those mediums in order to further the case.
Yeah. A couple questions, comments. Peter Barclay, could you ask, please, if there will be a clear signal from the SNP that independence is there to be taken, no party politics, just a clear indication of intent? I wish they would. Let me preface it by saying that I think they have. For example, Nicola Sturgeon obviously wanting independence and, you know, obviously in favor of a referendum, but hamstrung both by the coronavirus, but also by the right-wing press. And anytime she deviates from, you know, she gets pounced on by the press anytime she even talks about it. And it's actually the other parties that talk about independence more than Sturgeon at this point. But I feel like that's such a restraint, which is unfortunate. She was at her press conferences. I would love her saying, well, if we were independent, we'd be able to do this and we'd be able to do that, but we're not because we're in the UK government. But she won't do that. I know it's not her nature, obviously, but I think it would be helpful if there was a little harder hitting in that respect.
Yeah, but tact and line that she takes is obfuscation of that statement, because in a roundabout way, she is. I was chided slightly by Broadcast in Scotland for saying that, you know, she basically handed Jackson Carlow his arse on a plate last week because of his disingenuous questioning. And she does it in a roundabout manner. And I'm not suggesting that indie activists are stupid, but I am suggesting that indie activists need to learn to read between the lines of Nicola's responses, because they are very, very clever.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
She has independence the forefront of her mind. I've known Nicola for nigh on 20-odd years. Mm-hmm. I've only been in the party for about 7 years. Mm-hmm. And I know her to be a tenacious character that has, you know, one thing in common with me is the fact that both of us hate what Thatcher has done to our country.
Yeah.
If we thought that Thatcher done what she done, and we know what she done, what is happening just now is a diluted version of that.
I would say, given all that she's done, it's an extension of it, and in certain ways it's worse. Wanting to pull out of not only the EU, but the European Court of Human Rights. She did horrific damage, but it's almost like they're just continuing it and making it, you know, bringing it down even lower.
I would agree with you on that. Boris Johnson is not in the same league as Margaret Thatcher. But then we all know that it's Boris Johnson is not running that government.
Yeah, yeah. It's the oligarchs. Hedge fund managers.
Yeah, of course it is.
He's just a useful idiot. Yeah.
And again, it is a small, slim chance. But I personally, I wouldn't put it past Boris to wake up one morning and say, you know, bugger it. Just give Scotland their independence and tell them to bugger off.
Yeah, well, I don't think the establishment...
No, but that's the level that he works in.
Yeah.
You know, because things to Boris are like the buses that he reportedly, you know, builds. you know, they are playthings. And, you know, Scotland is a plaything. It has always been a plaything of the Westminster establishment.
It's a private hunting ground for the aristocrats. It's a lot.
Yeah, it can be equally discarded, you know, like a child's toy. We have to remember the fact that they do have this dream of empire.
Yeah.
And it is up to us. And again, I'll go back, as you quite rightly said about Ireland, and I'll go back to what I was talking about with regards to India. We have to grind them down. That is the only way that they would possibly give us the Section 30 that Ian and his colleagues desire so much.
That was militarily with lots of guns and death. I mean, Scotland, I would hope, would not have to go through that. But anyway, I we've only got a few minutes left, so I wanted to get on to a couple other things before we say goodbye to our audience. Neil McCauley, can we present the digital covenant directly to the UN? Yes, and international law does not say anything regard to unilateral declarations of independence. It is silent on the issue. There was the Kosovo decision a few years ago, which basically said there's nothing that allows it, but there's nothing that prevents it in international law. So if there was a covenant, not only was a unilateral declaration, but actually demonstrated broad popular support, that would carry more weight. And each case is different, and so countries seeking independence, seeking recognition from the UN as being a separate state, they can petition it, and certainly the blockchain covenant would be something that we could employ, buttress the support for independence based on the notion of self-determination, and that's why the UK is so reluctant to grant a referendum, just as the same as in Catalonia, even though it's much more violent there. But again, this would be a peaceful, democratic, irrefutable means to show support for independence. So we will certainly not stop collecting signatures. Jay the Cat on YouTube, do they think the UK government has run out of dirty tricks since they deployed pretty much every asset they had to secure a no vote the first time? So I agree.
They'll have more up their sleeve. Don't you worry about it.
Well, but that's what I love about this thing with the digital covenant. I'm not going to stop plugging it, but they can't do anything about it. You know, I mean, people just keep signing. They can't, you know, they can't steal any ballots. They can't, you know, put troops up at the polling stations. They can't deny the possibility of doing it. I mean, so that's what, so I agree that they don't have it. I'm sure they've got plenty more dirty tricks where they came from. They blew a lot of positive case back in 2014. If there was another referendum, it would only be very, very dirty and negative.
That's why I then go back and say to the people on the doorstep, you must qualify your union to me.
Yeah.
You have to convince me that your union is working, because I know different now.
Mm-hmm.
And again, being very respectful to these people on the doorstep, we have to point out, and you will well know this, Mark, is the fact that whilst being a fervent unionist or a fervent Republican, in regard of where you live, be it in Brittany and France, be it in Catalonia and Spain, or Berlin and Germany, you have that right to be a different nationality living in a different country.
Sure.
When you travel to Germany or when you travel to France, you don't automatically become French or German.
No, it's how you feel.
Exactly. So if you think that you're British and you're in Germany or you're in France or you're in Spain, then you are British. Personally, when I travel, I'm Scottish.
Yeah.
and that is it. These people can be living in Scotland in an independent country, and they will be more than capable, and they will never be decried to make their point for the union.
Yeah.
That is what a democracy is all about.
Agreed. Another one that this is an interesting one, because we were just talking about this before we got on air. Please discuss the subject of a new party. How would it work? List votes, etc. So we were talking about that, and you were saying quite rightly, I feel that we, if there is going to be another party, there needs to be one. There should not be five or six. Expand on that. I mean, because you know more about it than I do. But what is the? I mean, what are they talking about? Is it several different parties, and how would that work?
At this moment in time, I believe that there are several different parties, and we have to start with the Greens. And the Greens are an established, credible, recognised party. Then after you have got the SSP, or whatever Tommy Sheridan is calling his party now, Solidarity, or you then have the possibility of Rise. You then have the possibility of the Scottish Alliance, I think they're called. And you then have to question the credibility of all these individual parties. Now, there is another party that has come out, which is the Scottish Independence Party, or the Independent Scotland Party.
Or the Scottish Independence Party of Judea.
Yeah. You could even be Tooting Popular Front, going back to Citizen Smith in the 70s. I am a personal friend of Colette Walker. She was an activist alongside me in the SNP. She is a prolific disability rights campaigner. I have the utmost respect for her. But as I say, and having discussed this with my newly qualified son, that the hold the haunt system could be broken by one party, not six. If you look at the 800,000 votes were on the list that were hoovered up by the SNP, they got four MSPs on the list.
Yeah.
Stands to reason, if you get, just for argument's sake, the SNP get 200,000 votes on the list, chances are, because of the formula that's applied, where you get one seat, it's then multiplied by X amount of votes, and you know, and it's multiplied once, twice, three times. You may only get five MSPs, six yep. MSPs, whereas yep. the smaller parties in proportionality of the percentage of votes may be able to pick up three, four, five, possibly six. But okay. you cannot discount the votes that will go to the Greens.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, we need to wrap this up because we've got another show coming to the Two Old Heads starting in a few minutes. Thank you all for watching. Go to digitalcovenant.scot. Take your ID papers, sign it, get other people to sign it. We want to get, you know, 3 million signatures in the next coming months, certainly before Christmas. So, but we need people to talk about it and show it. Please don't mistrust it. It's myself and other very dedicated people who have put this together over a period of months so that Scots can irrefutably demonstrate their support for independence, completely separate from any government referendum. It can be done much more easily than a referendum. It's a fraction of the cost.
Can I just make one quick point before you go on that?
Yeah.
I think that you have to give a certain amount of reassurance to indie activists that are interested on it, that it is not a data harvesting.
No, it is absolutely not. All it is you're recording. We're recording your signature. That's it. We get rid of the information as soon as we have that signature and that in the code of the 96-digit code or whatever it is. That is your transaction code that shows that you have signed that document that is there forever. You can verify it in perpetuity, and it will register your support for independence, provided that you are a legal resident of Scotland.
Yeah, but I think it's an important point to make so that people are not scared of it.
I agree with that, and we have been endeavoring to put that point across. Okay, so let's go ahead and wrap it up. But thank you, everybody, for watching, and I'll be back next week with a guest that I don't know the identity of.
This is a new voice for a new Scotland.